Oh, not a problem at all. Hey, thanks for being even interested. So, hey, it's a beautiful thing.
Just briefly for our listeners' context here, I saw you sort of near the front of the stage there at the Legends Brunch in Chicago towards the end of the event. From a distance, I thought, oh, I'm 95% sure that's Jeff Sanders. And I had my wife, Lisa, with me. I was trying to see if Lisa could subtly look at your name tag to see if it said Jeff. She couldn't tell. So I just said to her, oh, I'll just go up to him and ask him. So I went up and asked, oh, sorry, are you Jeff Sanders? And sure enough, you were.
Right.
And that's thankfully how this chat came to be. So I'm glad I recognized you from a distance.
And you are in Australia right now.
You're talking NBA basketball. You're talking great teams. You're talking great individual players.
Takes it off and there's number 23. And of course, Johnny goes nuts.
We're all getting goosebumps thinking about it now.
I just tried to go out there and play my game.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Adam. I don't like anybody. I'm not a people person.
Grant, you made the pass. Yes. Christian, can you catch the ball? Yes.
All the stars were aligned and all the muscles fired at the right time. And I was able to get off the ground and throw one down.
I was saving that as a surprise for you.
And now, introducing your host for In All Airness, Adam Ryan.
Welcome to episode 109. Thanks for joining me. I'm very happy to welcome Georgia Southern University Hall of Famer and NBA veteran Jeff Sanders. You heard the origin story of our in-person meeting at the open of the show. Jeff is the first of numerous former players that I had the pleasure of meeting in Chicago who will be guesting on the podcast. We cover his life in basketball, and for context, Jeff was one of three selections made by the Chicago Bulls in the first round of the 1989 NBA draft. The other two, BJ Armstrong and Stacey King. This is a really fun chat that I'm confident you'll enjoy. Towards the end of the episode, I'll share another great podcast review. If you can spare a moment or two, please add your review via your listening app. It'd be most appreciated. Show notes for this episode and access to a huge archive of past episodes are available at inallairness.com. Now, onto the show. My guest today currently ranks fifth all-time in career points and rebounds at Georgia Southern University. Sporting News named him an honourable mention All-American in 1989. He's an NBA veteran with international playing experience too. Jeff Sanders, thanks for joining me.
Hi, how you doing? No problem. Excited to be here.
I'm going very well, thanks, and looking forward to chatting with you. Now, this conversation actually came about from a brief meeting we had at Legends Brunch in Chicago over All-Star Weekend 2020. So it was a pleasure to have a chance to briefly meet you in person, and I'm glad that this conversation is one of the things to come from it.
I'm happy to meet you also. I am not necessarily shocked, but just kind of impressed that, you know, someone will be interested in this over in Australia. So that's nice to know.
What did you make of the Legends Brunch, actually, just before we get into the conversation about your career? How was it to be back in your home city of Chicago, where the All-Star Weekend was hosted way back in 1988, to have a chance to sort of to reconnect with friends and contemporaries of yours from many years gone?
Well, I'll tell you like this, that week, it was just busy. It was just a busy week, and I was looking forward to it all being over. Maybe that's because I'm older now, and I did so much during that week. Between going to work, between trying to do a basketball camp, speak to some youth, show up at some of our events. It just was nonstop the whole week.
In terms of your early years, Jeff, what sports were you playing when you were a youngster, and when did basketball become your primary focus?
Well, actually, I played football, and I was a quarterback in the little leagues, and then as I grew up, I was wide receiver since then in high school. But my first love wasn't football or basketball. I think football was my second love. My first love was music. And I actually was in my middle school band, high school band for 3 years. And then as basketball became a little more serious because I got a little taller, I just kind of stuck with basketball to see if I can get a scholarship to college and play.
Now you mentioned that. I read somewhere in one of the articles whilst researching that you played tuba in the school band. Is that the main instrument you played, or did you play other ones as well?
Well, I played the bass guitar and I played baritone. I started out with the trombone in middle school, and I wound up falling in love with the tuba and the bass guitar. So I stayed with those, and that was my favorite.
Fantastic. Do you still play music and enjoy music regularly these days?
I don't play it on no instrument, but I love music. I listen to all different types of music. I mean, it really doesn't matter if it's in English or not in English. If it has a nice tone or nice beat to it, I listen to it.
Now, I did delve a little into your high school career. You were a McDonald's All-American as a senior. What can you actually sort of tell us about your high school days?
The only reason why I played basketball because I had some friends on the team. They kept pushing me to play. I didn't really want to play. And then I think I grew 5 inches in 3 months my upcoming sophomore year. So I went from 6'2 to 6'7, 6'8, and they kept harassing me. So I just said, okay, I'll play. Once the teachers and the principal started harassing me, then I said, okay, I'll play. I was the tallest kid in school at that particular time. And then I grew a couple more inches. I still didn't really take it serious until I think my junior year is when I kind of started taking it serious, thinking I could really get into college with a scholarship. That was something my mother pushed. So, of course, I wanted to make sure that she didn't have to pay for me to go to school. So I just worked hard at that. Turned out to be highly recruited. Turned out to be a McDonald's All-American. All things that I was not expecting, but it was great to achieve that.
Yeah, some great achievements there, given that you weren't particularly interested until you were coerced into perhaps taking part on the team.
Right.
You had an injury, foot-related injury, that kept you out of the last part of your high school career?
The ankle injury. I sprained my ankle in the state playoffs my senior year. Pretty bad because, and I still tried to come back and play. And I couldn't even put any weight on it, but I still tried to come back and play because I'd never been injured before. And my team, you know, was counting on me tremendously that particular game. And I felt that I was on the way to another 40-point game because it was early in the second quarter and I already had 12 or 14 points. So I was kind of gaining steam. And then I came down on someone's foot and sprained my ankle pretty bad. They had to carry me off the floor. Then I was out for the rest of the first half. Halftime, they retaped it, tried to see if I could put any weight on it. And I still came back and tried to play the third quarter, only to wind up watching the game from the sideline. And then we lost.
Mm-hmm. How far did the team progress into the playoffs in your senior season?
We were, I think, one or two games away from the championship. I think one game away from the championship.
Very disappointing.
Yeah.
Did that impact any all-star games taking place in between your high school career finishing and starting in college?
It definitely did because I couldn't play in those, so I had to nurse the ankle. And it took a while, but, you know, by the time I was ready to go off to college, it was okay. But I couldn't really do anything until probably that summer.
You were recruited by Georgia Southern's assistant coach, Mike Backus.
Yes.
What other schools were hoping that you'd sign with them before you committed to the Eagles?
Well, actually, the only reason why I committed to the Eagles was because, again, my mother didn't want me to go that far away from home. I was actually recruited by Kentucky more than I was any other school. Joby Hall was the head coach at that time, and he would come to quite a few of my games, or the scouts would come to a few of my games to see me play. There's so many scouts there to have a conversation with me. I would sneak out the back door to go home because I didn't want to deal with all of the hoopla. And you know, I was never a want to be out in front of everybody and everybody to notice that, you know, this is Jeff and all of this is going on and that's going on. I was always trying to get out of the light. You know, just came to do what I had to do on the court and go home. And the way Mike Backus got me was because he would be out there, but then when I get home, he was already at my house sitting talking to my mother. So he convinced her that the best place for me to go was Georgia Southern.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, the school was just a college called Georgia Southern College. And they only had about 7,000 to 8,000 students. And by the time I left, they were up to, I think, 13,000 or 17,000. And now they're up to 30,000.
Wow.
From the notoriety that I brought there, they became the university the next year.
Okay, great to hear. So as a freshman, your Eagles went 15-13. You played in every game and averaged almost 10 points and more than 6 rebounds a game. So some really good numbers there as a freshman. Do you remember that transition from high school to college and how you fared in that first season?
Yes. Frank Kearns, my head coach, was he was something else. I'll just put it like that. He was something else because, you know, coming out of high school, being a star and everything, you know, you go into college and you kind of carry some of that behavior with you, you know, being disrespectful with it or not. You just kind of carry some of the lackadaisical behavior with you. That was one of the things he did not play. He's like, I don't care what you did in high school. You're not going to do that here. Or you can go home. That got rid of all that. So after that, I continued to work hard to try and get better.
He laid down the law there for you.
He laid down the law the first few days.
In terms of your sophomore season at Georgia Southern, you went 20-11, and you played in every game, averaging 11.5 points and 6.5 rebounds per game. I've read that you were named the Trans-America Athletic Conference, or TAAC, tournament MVP after your squad defeated Stetson, I think it was, to win the conference tournament. That victory earned the Eagles an automatic berth into the 1987 NCAA tournament, where you'd meet Syracuse, which was obviously a team that included some heavyweights like Derek Coleman, Ronnie Cicely, Sherman Douglas. The Orangemen held on for a hard-fought win, 79-73, at the Carrier Dome. How did it feel for you to compete so well against would-be national championship finalists Syracuse?
Well, at the time, I don't think we were even thinking that they were such a great team. We knew they were a good team, but I think the biggest thing we wanted to stop was their fast break. They were dunking on everybody. So, and at the time, yeah, defensive scoring percentage, we were first in the nation 2 years in a row for where we would allow teams only so many points because we played a matchup zone and were pretty good at it. And that particular game, I don't want to say the ref did this or did that, but that particular game, I had 4 fouls in the first half. So we were up the whole game until I think I fouled out in late in the third quarter. And then we wound up losing by only 6 points. And everybody else they played, they'd be about 25, 30 points. Even though we lost, I felt that we put on a good showing and a lot of teams got to, you know who Georgia Southern was at that particular time.
How did it feel to play in a venue like the Carrier Dome, which obviously was very famous over the years and had a massive capacity of crowd? How did that compare to the crowd you would be playing in front of at your home court for Georgia Southern?
Well, hey, we were in front of 30,000 fans, and they were not for us. So that was a little nerve-wracking, you know, but I don't think their fans were any more rowdier than Arkansas Little Rock. That was a battle for so many years between Georgia Southern and Arkansas Little Rock. We were used to the hostile fans, but like I said, they were kind of silent throughout that game in Syracuse, but it was really something to see as far as how many people were actually coming to a college basketball game. And, you know, and then I became friends with Sherman Douglas and teammates with Sherman and Ronnie down in Miami for a minute for a preseason. And I became friends with Derek as well, playing throughout the league. You know, we see each other now. It's like, man, like we done put on 100 pounds. Go back there. You go back to them days. Oh, man, great days. And they were hell of a players, all three of them.
That's fantastic to hear. I appreciate you sharing these memories with us. In your junior season, you guys went 24-7, and your production jumped significantly to over 18 points and more than 8 rebounds a game. You were named the MVP of the TAAC, and you played Georgia, including their future NBA player, Willie Anderson, in the opening round of the 88 National Invitational Tournament.
Right.
That game was held at Georgia Coliseum, and you led your Eagles with 18 points. However, Willie's Bulldogs prevailed 53-48. How intense was that matchup and also just the in-state rivalry between the teams in general?
That was a very exciting game because Willie was a heck of a scorer. It was pretty hard to contain him, but just the competition, which is what I love in general, just to compete at that level. And University of Georgia was one of the schools that they did recruit me, but that was one of the schools I went to a basketball camp there summer of my upcoming junior year. I felt good about coming back there to play, but I really thought we would win, you know, again, another close game. You know, we wound up losing.
In your senior campaign, you led the Eagles with over 23 points a game, which is second all time in single season scoring, and you had almost 9 rebounds a contest as well. You led the team to a 23-6 record and at one stage reeled off 17 straight wins. You were also named the TAAC MVP for a second time. One game I'd love to ask you about in particular was in early January of 1989. You had a career-high 38 points against Mercer, which was the 6th highest scoring game of your university's Division I era, which goes back to 1972. So incredible effort there. Do you remember that game against Mercer? And if so, what springs to mind from that 38-point outing?
I don't quite remember how many points I had. It was always a good game because I forgot his first name was Sanders. I forgot his last name, but we used to play against each other in high school. And he went to another school in Georgia from Washington County. And we would play against each other in high school. So he went to Mercer, and then we wound up playing against each other throughout college. So it was just always look forward to playing against him. But my first year in Southern, we played Mercer. They had Sam Mitchell.
Oh, okay.
You see him on NBA TV now. Sam Mitchell was forced to be reckoned with. We had our battles. I was just always excited to play against Mercer, Arkansas Little Rock, or Texas San Antonio.
Mentioning Texas San Antonio there, a guy that played for them probably around the same era as you would have been Derek Gervin, the brother of George. Derek's a former guest and friend of the show. Do you remember playing either with or against Derek in any of the levels of basketball throughout the 80s?
I don't remember playing against Derek. I think I was gone when Derek came there. But me and Derek did become friends because we played in the minor league, the CBA, against each other. And I think we may have played with each other in Albany, New York.
Uh-huh.
Me and Derek was pretty decent friends, too. Yeah, he was a heck of a player, too.
Yeah, it definitely was. I'll get to your CBA days as well in a little while. Your final college game was an 83-74 loss to Alabama Birmingham in round one of the 1989 NIT. You had a great game, 24 points and 8 rebounds. Now, you played every game of your college career and started all but two of your 119 contests. You left college with averages of more than 15 points, 7.5 rebounds, and 2.1 steals per game. And you currently rank first all-time in single-season points with 674, and you're third all-time in career points with 1,861. So last year marked 30 years since your college career ended. When you reflect on it now, with those sort of achievements in the rearview mirror, what are you most proud of?
Every time I hear somebody tell me what I used to do, I'm very proud of it, but I really don't remember a lot of it unless I read a program where they put all that in there when I was inducted into the Hall of Fame. So to sit here and hear you, you know, recall some of the game, I forgot all about the Alabama-Birmingham game. sometimes you just forget some of the things you do because it was something that you did in the past. And, you know, of course, I'm proud of it all, but I don't dwell on things that I used to do in that particular sense. But, you know, it's always nice to reminisce and even see some of the games or the footage or whatever, you know, and go back and, you know, show your children and friends and like, hey, I was pretty decent back in the day. Regardless of what you might think of me today, I was pretty decent back then.
In mid-April of 1989, I read that you took part in the All-Star Classic in Orlando. In the consolation game, you had an 18-point outing against Stacey King's West squad. Now, as some listeners would know, you and Stacey would become teammates in the NBA only a few months later. Do you remember much about that trip to Florida and taking part?
Yes, and what's amazing about that, we played against each other, but we were roommates.
Oh, really?
So we talked all the time. Yeah, we were roommates. A lot of people didn't know that, but we were roommates, so we were sitting talking about everything, you know, laughing, joking. And so when we both get drafted here, it was just, you know, like natural that we would hang out and, you know, be best of buddies. You know, we were friends for many, many years.
Really pleased to hear that. Now, in that game that I talked about where you played against Stacey, he had a 40-point, 13-rebound, 3-block game, which is incredible. So that obviously would have helped his draft stocks. Other guys that took part in the All-Star Classic included Kenny Battle, Tim Hardaway, John Morton, just to name a few that obviously would go on to become NBA players as well.
Right.
Now, in June, you were invited to a 4-day camp that was held in Chicago ahead of the 1989 NBA draft. The NBA's director of scouting, Marty Blake, oversaw proceedings. And from what I've read, guys like Red Auerbach, Doug Moe, Kevin Lockery, and Dick Versace were just some of the NBA figures who were in attendance. Do you have many memories of that pre-draft camp and how you fared?
Yeah, the pre-draft camp was, I guess, more of guys competing opposed to where it is now. Now it's more like a, they call it a combine, where you come in and they check out what you can do as far as the drills they put you through. Back when I came, we competed against each other two or three times each day for those 4 days. So a lot of the coaches and scouts got to see the guy, you know, the guys actually play. And here, I think they just do a lot of testing, which we did some of that. But at the end of the day, the most important thing they wanted to see was us play against each other. So, I mean, I did pretty well here too, because after the camp was over, Jerry Krause picked me up and took me around all throughout the city, and then also took me to the Bulls facility, which was the multiplex. And some of those drills that they do now at the combine, we did some of those at the multiplex. So that's how they determine my ability to, you know, play offense and defense, my lateral direction, change direction, how quick I could do that. And I think that was one of the, if not the main reason they drafted me, because one of the things that he said, I had the quickest change of direction, my lateral change of direction was faster than anybody else they brought in and tested. And I said, well, y'all forgot about it. I did average almost 24 points a game in college. It's like, ah, we're not going to draft you for that. I said, what? Really? Like, well, we already have a score. I said, well, yeah, I know you do, and I'm not trying to compete with him. But, man, that's what you draft me for, because I could play defense? I'm like, okay.
How did you find that trip to the multiplex? Did you get to meet any of the current Bulls of that time before that you became teammates with them?
Not really. Not until they drafted me in the summer league. It's 1st of June, so the season was over, so most of the guys were going home for vacation.
Yeah, true.
So when they drafted me and we got ready to start the training for the summer league, that's when I got to meet a few of the guys. I got to meet Will Perdue. I already knew Horace Grant because we played against each other in high school, so I knew him and Harvey. And then, of course, I knew Stacy and BJ. Then I met a lot of the other guys that they brought in, you know, to go to camp. But I didn't meet any of the veterans until I come back after the summer league and come back to train for the beginning of the season. Then I met Bill Cartwright, who became my mentor to this day. He's still my mentor. We're still good friends. Scotty and Horace, we're still good friends with them. Michael. So I didn't meet them until right before vet camp started.
Gotcha. In terms of that 1989 NBA draft, it was held in late June, and the Bulls selected you with the 20th overall pick. Do you remember much about the day itself, and how did it feel to hear your name called out when you were selected by the Bulls?
Well, actually, I was in summer school. I was trying to finish some classes up because I knew once I got drafted, I was going to have a short period to come back and graduate. The scout from Portland had followed me all throughout my senior year, and he actually called me the night before the draft and told me what to expect the next day, because Portland was going to draft me at 22.
Huh.
So I was expecting to be drafted by Portland. And then I think that morning, about early afternoon, my agent called me and told me that the Bulls might pick me because they traded Brad Sellers, I think, to Seattle and cleared up a spot. So he said they might draft you. He didn't say they were. He said just they might draft you. I got kind of excited, but then I didn't want to get too excited because I didn't know where I was going to go. When they called my name, I was excited for two reasons. One, that I was getting a chance to play with Michael Jordan. Two, being from Georgia, I didn't have to travel all across the United States to play to Portland. So it was a great night. It was a great night.
Oh, fantastic. I love hearing these memories. Thanks very much for sharing them. Now, soon after the draft, Chicago's three first-round picks, Stacey King, BJ Armstrong, and yourself, met with the media at a press conference where you're there with Jerry Krause. How did you go when it came to talking as one of the first-round draft picks of the Bulls in the weeks and months after?
I think it was more of a what could we add to the team already that, you know, was up and coming. And, you know, where did we see ourselves fitting in? There's more or less questions like that. You know, we all were excited about coming here, ready to get to work, just to be a part of it.
Though he had another year left on his contract and had led the Bulls to the 1989 Eastern Conference Finals, Coach Doug Collins was fired by the Bulls in early July. Did you have any interaction with Doug before his dismissal, or had you not really got to have a chance to chat with him to that point?
I got to chat with him when Jerry took me out there after the pre-draft camp. And then, of course, you know, after he was fired and, you know, for years we got to chat and talk, you know, all the time after that. But before he got fired, we only had that short period of time when Jerry took me to the facility for the workout.
As per the timeline for my research, it looks like you signed a contract with the Bulls in late July. And then an article I read indicated you were going to play for the Bulls rookie team in the 8-game California League, which you alluded to a little while ago. What was that experience like as a rookie for the Bulls in that California League?
I really enjoyed playing in the LA Summer League. I really enjoyed playing in that because I don't know who led the league in scoring, but I averaged like 31 points and, I don't know, 10, 11 rebounds during that time. So I was very excited about playing. And even though I was ready for the season to start, because I think after summer league was over, I had a conversation with Phil. You know, Phil was having conversations with each player one-on-one. And I was really excited and feel like, just calm down. I said, okay, I'm going to calm down. Like, but, you know, because I was so excited about the way the summer league went. We won 4 and lost 4 or something like that. I think we played like 8 games. So I got there the day they had a game. So I didn't play that first game. I just got to watch and see what we were, you know, what we're doing. The next 3 games, I played small forward. I didn't even play power forward because we had 2 other 7-footers, Will Perdue and Greg Wilson. But we kept losing. So I asked Tex Winters, I said, can I go between the 2 positions? Can I play power forward and small forward? And at first, he didn't want me to play power forward at all. But I guess we had lost 4 games. He said, all right, I'm going to let you go down there and play it to the natural position. So that's when we won the last 4. I was very excited about that. I think Phil told me to calm down. I think that he spoke right there, and I just kind of, okay, I'm going to calm down. I got a little too excited. You know, you already have a score. You're right, so let me just calm down.
That's some great output, though, in those games. Did Tex Winter lead the team, did he, as the head coach?
During the summer league, yeah, Tex was the coach, yes.
What was it like to have him as your head coach for that period of time and then have him back on the coaching staff back in Chicago?
The funny thing about Tex, you really didn't understand coming in as a rookie, his genius for offense. And the triangle offense, because that's what we were running at that time. Take a while to kind of understand what's going on. And everything in that offense is generated off of everybody's reaction. So you and one other person, and depending upon what your reaction is, will make me react a certain way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But when you can do that with 5 guys, that anything that the defense is doing is a mistake, then that says a whole lot about how you can put together a team with one like mind. You know, that's almost impossible today.
In terms of the preseason with the Bulls, your team opened 3-0 to start the preseason campaign. And on October 19th, the team announced that you had sustained a stress fracture in your right foot, which dated back to a practice session, I think, on October the 9th of 89.
Second day of practice.
Wow.
Second day of practice, Will Perdue landed on my foot. I didn't know if it was intentional or accidental, but, you know, at the time, I thought it was intentional. Fractured that particular bone in my foot, but you always hear the guy say, hey, rookies can't get hurt. So I continued to try to play on it for about 2 weeks. And then after a while, I just couldn't take the pain anymore. The trainer decided to get me an x-ray, MRI, actually. And that's when they saw the little stress fracture. Told me I had to sit down, put me in a walking boot, and I had to sit down for the next 2.5 months.
How devastating was that diagnosis, given the fact that you hadn't missed a single game of college throughout your career?
Well, I mean, it was devastating. Definitely was devastating. But at the same time, you know, I was still a part of the team. I still got to come to the games and work out with stuff in practice, you know, in the pool and stuff like that. It was an experience, but I wasn't too distressed about it because I was still a part of the team.
Jerry Krause was quoted with the following after the news of this happening. This really hurts because Jeff had a chance to play a lot. He had been playing great defense and he could have helped us defensively at 2 positions, small forward and power forward. So this is so upsetting. Because up to that point, you were averaging 4 points and 3 rebounds in only 15 minutes a game. Against Phoenix, you'd made all 3 field goals and you had 3 assists in only 13 minutes. So you were cleared to rehab, I think, in early December before the Bulls activated you the week before Christmas. And I think they waived Jack Haley to do that. Rest in peace to Jack. Jack would actually rejoin the Bulls in the 96 season, for what it's worth. But after missing the opening 22 games of the season, your first 3 games with Chicago were before Christmas and were on the road at Orlando, Atlanta, and Philadelphia. Your first NBA points came against the 76ers in a game where you had 7 rebounds and 8 would be your career high, so a great start. Do you actually have any memory of your first NBA points, Jeff?
No, I didn't until I saw one of the games. You know, every now and then I'll Google some of the old games and see if they'll show up. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I never did remember what game I scored my first 2 points in. And I guess I really wasn't even thinking about it, the first 2 points. I was just thinking that, hey, I get to score and I'm going to keep playing and, you know, we're going to see where this thing goes.
How was the atmosphere of playing inside Chicago Stadium? I was there back in 1994, the last season before the United Center came into play, and it was an incredible atmosphere there. And that was the season where Jordan was retired, but Scottie Pippen was the team's leader. In 1990 season, when you were playing there with Chicago, how did it feel to be part of the team that was just rocking and rolling on the way to bigger and better things that were ahead?
I mean, it was great. It was great. The atmosphere, the crowd. I mean, I thought we had the loudest fans in the whole league at that time because, I mean, it was just like it was sitting on top of us. So it was beautiful. I loved it because, you know, they were supporting us. So wonderful. I loved every minute of it.
Now, as a rookie, a guy you've mentioned already, Phil Jackson, was your head coach, the Zen Master. How was your relationship with Phil for the time that you were in Chicago?
I thought I always had a great relationship with Phil. We never did have any issues or anything. Anything he said I needed to do, that's what I did. So if it was something he said, I need you to work on this, to improve on this, you know, I did. I mean, I think I had that relationship with all four of the coaches, Johnny Bock, Tex Winters, and Jim Clemens. So I think I had a great relationship with all four.
In terms of the time you're on the Bulls, taking part in practice sessions and behind closed doors, you know, going up against guys either on the same team as or against in practice, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, you know, Horace Grant, all those sort of guys, Bill Cartwright, how were some of those practices back in the day? And we hear about the legendary stories of how competitive some of these guys were. What sort of springs to mind when you think about some of those battles at the multiplex on the practice courts?
Pretty much every practice that Michael played in was competitive. And it was interesting because Phil was always trying to find a new challenge for Michael. So, you know, he would take him off of the starting team and put him, you know, with a lot of the second and third string players and figure out how is he going to win this particular game. And, you know, Michael found the way. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that some of the guys get to see in the game, they didn't get to see us in practice. And he was doing more than that in practice than he was in the game. So sometimes the practice was harder than the game. Always competitive, always competitive. Even when we just shooting around, it was competitive.
He'd always try and take the victory?
Of course. And if he lost, and there were times he lost, we'd let him have it. And then the next time we practice, of course, he's talking before practice even gets started. So I was like, okay, it's going to be a long day today.
Oh, that's great. Now, moving on to August of 1990, you broke your left hand in the final game of the California Summer League.
Right.
You played in 7 of 8 games, and you were averaging 7 points, 6.3 rebounds, and 3.3 assists per game. The GM, Jerry Krause, said that he expected you to be ready for training camp in October. However, in early October, Chicago then traded you to Miami. What do you believe changed from August through to the time that you were dealt to the Heat?
I have no idea, because at the time, I think I was still just trying to get over the injury to my hand, because I wound up breaking the fourth bone in my knuckle. So, and that was on Kenny Battle in the summer league. So that was kind of, you know, how that happened. But between August and October, I just thought maybe he was trying to figure out how he could put another team together. I don't know. But yeah, they traded me to Miami, and I didn't even have a notion that I was being traded until 2 days before training camp was supposed to start. I hear about it from my agent, you know, that you've just been traded. I said, what? And then that's where the whole mentality changed, because now, you know, I'm feeling like you don't want me after we've gone through all of this and gone through all of that. So it was just an experience, you know. I won't say rookie, but kind of sort of rookie, because I was hurt, you know, the first half of the season. And then summer league come, I broke my hand. So it's kind of like I didn't really get to show my full potential. I got traded before I was able to do that. And I look now, and years after, you know, guys get hurt and sit on the team for 2 years and never even get to play, but they stay on the same team with a minor injury or another injury or whatever. I said, times are definitely different. Definitely different now.
Yeah, absolutely they are. Thanks for sharing these recollections too. I know some of the questions aren't the greatest ones to be answering due to injuries and whatnot, so it's just unfortunate. In terms of your time with Miami, you played in 6 preseason games as a member of the Heat, and you averaged almost 7 points and more than 4 rebounds a game. Just before the month ended, Miami waived you. Did you see that coming, and what sort of stands out from the month or so that you were a part of the Miami Heat franchise?
I was having, I think, a great time on Miami, and me and the coach, Ron Rothstein, we didn't kind of get along, and he, I won't say set me up, but he kind of asked me a couple of questions about wanting to be put on waivers, and I agreed. And that's how I got waived, because I didn't understand what waivers meant, but he explained it to me in the sense of, this is where I can put you out there where another team can pick you up in 48 hours. And I said, I agreed. I said, okay, yeah, let's do that, because I think he was just messing with me on different things. You know how you're testing the players, I don't want to say mental toughness, but you're testing the player's character or whatever. And We played a game against Sacramento. I think Ralph Sampson was guarding me, and I think I had 15 points at the half. Ron comes in the locker room and says, okay, I want you to take another shot the second half. Okay, well, Glenn Rice is out. Ryan Cycle is out. I think me and Sherman and Grant Long and Willie Burton, a couple other guys was playing. I want you to take another shot second half. Why not? Just because I don't. If you take one, I'm going to take you out of the game.
Wow.
And so I try my best not to take one. And, you know, 2-3 minutes go by and I wind up having the ball with the shot clock running down to 1 or 2 seconds. So I just shot the ball because the clock was running out. I didn't have time to pass. Sure enough, he takes me out of the game. I don't play no more for the next 2 preseason games.
Oh, wow.
And that's when we, you know, he saw that I was upset. And I'm like, man, you know, you don't want me here, let me know. And then we kind of had some words. And that's when he told me that. And I said, yeah, do that. So that's why I got waived. But I didn't understand that until my agent called me later and explained that to me. Had I knew it was bad, I would never said waived.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's terrible. It went down that way. That's really unfortunate, to say the least.
Right.
Before your next shot in the NBA, you joined the Albany Patroons of the Continental Basketball Association. And whilst you played 38 games in the 1991 CBA season, when you averaged almost 15 points and almost 10 boards a game, you also had a 10-day contract with the Charlotte Hornets in January. You played 3 games in Charlotte. Your first game was against the would-be NBA finalists, the LA Lakers. In 15 minutes, you had 8 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 block. What do you actually remember about that chance to play in Charlotte, Jeff?
I enjoyed that. And I actually thought I was going to be there for the rest of the season, to tell you the truth. But what happened, I think our big guy got hurt. I don't know if it was JR or somebody else got hurt. So they brought in Eric Legner as another center. I think he was 6'11", 7 feet. So that right there kind of hurt my chances of staying there for the rest of the year because me and JR Reed, same height, and who else? We had Kenny Gallison. So, you know, if we had 3 other guys at that size, you know, power forward, small forward, you know, plus I'm on the team with Kendall Gill, Dale Curry, Muggsy Bogues, Johnny Newman. It's just an unfortunate situation that the big guy got hurt. So they had no reason to keep me at that particular time. I got pushed into the center position in one game, and I had to guard Brad Daugherty. I was like, there's no way.
Oh, wow.
No way. We played Cleveland, and he just leaned on me. There's nothing I could do. So I was like, okay. Just one of those number situations. That's why I didn't stay there longer than that particular time.
I think Brad's a 5-time All-Star. He was, what, probably about 7 foot, maybe? 7'1"?
7'1", yes. Big, heavy, 280. Yeah, I am 230, 235. There's no way I could guard him.
Very tough. Returning to the CBA after that 10-day stint with the Hornets, you were playing for George Karl's iconic Albany Patroons team that went 50-6.
50-6, yeah.
In 1991. Which is staggering. How did it feel to be playing for a team that was on fire like the Patroons were at that stage?
I mean, well, we had, you know, I think 4 guys that was NBA players. Myself, Mario Ellie, got Ben's last name, and Albert King. You know, that's the younger brother of Adar King. So you had nothing but scorers on the team. And then we wound up getting Lloyd Daniels, who wound up playing for San Antonio.
Sweet pea.
UNLV, so. Yeah, Sweet Pea. That's my man. I still talk to him today.
Oh, that's good.
It was hard not to win. Hard not to win.
What was George Karl like as a personality as far as how did you find him either on or off the court to work with?
George was pretty much the same on and off the court. I mean, he was more of a player's coach. All the players enjoyed playing for him because he was going to always be honest with you about what he wanted from you. Pretty much cut and dry. You know, and he was a player's coach. He played before. So he recognized when the team was tired, just like Phil. You know, Phil recognized, hey, he's a former player. You know, your guys need some rest. He said, but if you didn't play more than 20 minutes, come in and get some shots up, get some, you know, workout, treatments, et cetera. You couldn't stay at home. And George was pretty much the same way.
I read somewhere that you attended most of the home playoff games that the Chicago Bulls played in 1991, and you were cheering them on from behind the bench. Is that accurate? And if so, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's accurate. That's accurate. I would always cheer them on. I'm probably one of the only players because I was a former Bull that would always, regardless of who I played for, I would do all my training at the Bulls facility with Al Ramil, who was the strength and conditioning coach for the Bulls. So I would see them every day and we'd work out together every day. I was always rooting for the Bulls because I always wanted to remain a Bull. You know, and a couple of different times I came back. I came back in 94. Everybody wanted me on the team except Jerry, I guess. Jerry was like, I only have two slots. And I got a guaranteed slot and a non-guaranteed slot. And he said, I'll offer you the non-guaranteed slot. And I'm like, why not the guaranteed slot? He said, well, because I'm looking at Frank Bukowski. And I like Frank. Frank was cool, but Frank had knee problems. He chose Frank and wanted me to wait until he made another decision. And I took a job over in Italy. I was just like, all right, I'm gone. I'm like, I can't wait for you to make a decision. So when I left, of course, Frank played only, I think, 15 games. And he was out because of his knee. You know, and then he apologized to me when I came back home for the summer because I always come back to the training. And I was like, well, I mean, I'm not upset. I mean, you know, I appreciate you. Feel, you know, apologize. You didn't have to. GM and assistant coaches and folks in the front office. I'm like, I didn't have to do that. And, you know, I'm doing what you thought was best. So we always had a good relationship. That was the year that Michael retired. And he would come back all season baseball. And we played pickup ball. Him and I was always on the same team. Because it was like, all right, we're going to let all the former Bulls play with the current Bulls. So we would always be on the same team playing pickup ball. So, you know, it was just fun. I wish they had brought me back. You always sit back and wonder, what if, you know what I'm saying? What if the injury never happened? My rookie year, you know, all that summer. In fact, I mean, I wait till we get to that. My last year with them, which was in 98, you know, I wind up breaking the same foot, but the fifth toe, I had to get a screw put in it.
Just had bad luck there with some unfortunate timing with injuries.
Right, with the Bulls. I ain't get hurt nowhere else. Just only here with the Bulls.
I had no idea that you actually were so close to joining the roster back in 1994. That's fascinating. Tremendous what if. Unfortunately, it just didn't go through. When you were playing in some of those pickup games with Jordan against other players in the off-season or, you know, at training sessions or whatever it may have been, given he was still in the midst of, you know, doing baseball stuff and was built more for a baseball-type body, how did he compare there to when you were playing with him in practice and on the court in the 1990 season?
Much different, of course, much different. Rusty, missing a lot of shots, but nobody was going to stop him from taking the shot.
<You know? laughs> That's true.
And I think that's got that spark back because he started coming back more and playing with the guys. And of course, I left and went to Italy. And then I see that they're begging him to come back and practice with him. So then I see he's in certain practices. I say, oh, okay, he's coming back. You know, everybody's like, no, he's not coming back. He's not coming back. But then he wound up coming back. And he played, but he struggled a little bit, but he played. And everybody was like, oh, he's washed up. That's it. I'm like, y'all don't know Mike. Y'all fans. I was like, I'm telling you this. That man is so competitive. I said, I guarantee you, come back the next year better than he was before he retired. He come back and won 3 championships in a row.
Yeah.
So I tell you right there, led the team in scoring, MVP. I said, I knew that because they don't know how competitive he is.
And that 1996 season particularly, they went 72-10, of course, and it won it all. Great memories. Thanks for sharing these. Now, according to basketballreference.com, for 5 days in October of 1991, you were a member of the New York Knicks. You signed as a free agent with them in early October. That season, they go on to meet the Bulls in the 7th and deciding game of the 1992 Eastern Conference semifinals. Do you have any recollection of that brief stint as a member of the Knicks? Did you actually take part in some practices, or how did that work?
Well, first, I was with them in the summer league. You know, Pat Riley, hell of a coach, hell of a conditioner to get you in shape, because we started 3.5 hours in the morning, 3.5 hours in the evening. Very long practices, but that's the best shape I'd ever been in my life. And we actually blew teams out in the summer league over there in L.A. I wound up, throughout the course of that, I tore cartilage in my right knee playing for him in the summer league out there. And so I had the surgery when I came back from L.A. and rehabbed it, signed back to go with them to veterans camp. And I wound up tweaking it in veterans camp. I didn't really tear anymore, but I think I strained it quite a bit. So at that point, I guess they felt like you're injured. You know, like I said, today, an injury from the 12th man on a roster, they wind up staying on the team 2-3 years. You know what I'm saying? But
yep.
At that time, it was, you know, just say, okay, you're hurt. You got to get somebody else and do this and do that. So that's how that happened. But I had a good time because I got to know Patrick. I got to know Greg Anthony. That was his first year. That was Stark's first year. Me and Anthony Mason was already friends. Of course, I knew Charles Oakley. It was an experience, but the guys were great guys. Kiki Vandeweghe, you know, I think Mark Jackson was still there. I had a great time with those guys. In fact, Chris Mullins, he's from New York. Before veterans camp started, we would play pickup ball. And Chris was coming play with us and stuff like that too. So,
oh wow,
all the guys I've been around, we've always had a good relationship. I don't think I've had any issues with any of the guys, and hopefully they've never had any with me.
You started the 1992 season in the CBA, and in January, if I'm not mistaken, you were named to the American Conference team in the 1992 CBA All-Star Game. And that's where I think you might have been teammates with Derek Gervin, who we mentioned a bit earlier. But your team lost to the National Conference 124-115. What was it like to be named to the CBA All-Star squad after struggling on and off with some unfortunately timed injuries?
The funny thing, stuff like that, I don't think I ever really got excited about because it wasn't the NBA. Even when I played in Europe, I was always on the All-Star. I never really got excited about it because I just felt like it wasn't what I really wanted it to be because I wasn't doing it yet. It was nice to be chosen, but at the same time, I wouldn't have been upset if I wasn't chosen. I'll just put it like that.
No, I understand. That makes perfect sense. Just shows how competitive you are. In late February of 1992, 2 weeks after being traded to Fort Wayne, where you were averaging about 20 points and 9 rebounds a game, an opportunity to return to the NBA presented itself, and this time it was with your home state team, the Atlanta Hawks. How did it feel to be back at the highest level again and playing for Atlanta?
Oh, I mean, it felt great. I actually felt even better because, you know, I'm from Georgia, so I was closer to home, and then I was playing on the team that I grew up watching, and I was playing with a teammate of mine that was actually one of my basketball idols growing up.
That'd be Dominique Wilkins?
And in fact, Dominique was one of the guys that came and spoke to us at one of the BC camps. It was my upcoming junior year. Dominique came and spoke at our camp, and I remember walking him back to the car, and I said to myself, I'm going to see you in 6 years. In 6 years, I was in the NBA. So I reminded him of that, of course. I don't think he remembered it, but I reminded him of that, and we became, you know, best of buddies on the same team. You know, we always had a good time. I always went and hung out at his house, and every time we went on the road somewhere, he called me up, hey, man, let's go here, let's go there. We had a great relationship.
I love to hear that. That's excellent. Thanks for sharing that sort of stuff. On April the 17th of 1992, in just 20 minutes, you had an NBA career high of 9 points to go along with your 7 rebounds, 2 steals and 1 assist against Chicago of all teams. Chicago won the game, but how did it feel individually to play so well against the team that drafted you back in 89? Do you actually remember that game?
Yes, yeah, no, I remember that game. It felt great. Felt even better the next year when we played them in Chicago after they won the championship. And we beat them. And then I think I was more excited for beating them at that particular game than the one I had the 9 points in. Because that game, I think I only had 1 shot attempt. And I don't know how many rebounds, but just playing defense and passing the ball and keeping my guys motivated and talking trash. I was just excited.
I can understand how that would feel. Playing behind guys like Kevin Willis and Adam Keefe, you appeared in 9 of the Hawks' first 14 games of the 1993 season before they waived you in mid-December of 92. Just looking back on that second season in Atlanta and the experiences that you did have at that time, how would you rate that tenure with the Hawks?
Well, during that time, what happened, I played before Adam. Adam played behind me. And because I played small forward and power forward, I was getting a little more playing time than him. I'm not going to say I know. What had come down from the top office was the fact that Adam was getting paid more than me, but he should have got more playing time than me. So that's what happened with that. Kind of shifted to, okay, we got to play Adam because he's making $1.5 million. Jeff is not making that much. So make him earn his money. And so from that point, then I started getting questions from the media. The coach started getting questions from the media why, you know, I wasn't playing. And I remember my time and how political it was being a Bull and then down in Miami, rather. Because I'm not opening my mouth. How I said was, hey, no comment, but every time we practice, you know, I just practice real hard against Adam. And one of the assistant coaches, Mr. Johnny Davis, who is still friends with me now, he told me, say, he understand. He said, just be quiet and just stay ready. And that's what I did. I didn't say nothing to the media. I kept quiet. And I guess the media kept asking questions. So eventually it was, you know what, better off waiting. Because I was getting ready to go to the game. We had a game against Detroit, I think it was. Secretary called me just before I was leaving the house to head to the game. He put me on the phone with Pete Babcock, the GM. And we sat on the phone for about 45 minutes with him not having an explanation for why he was doing what he was doing. He was told that this is what he had to do. So I said, that's interesting. And then that night, Dominique, I think, broke his hand. And so then they couldn't, you know what I'm saying, undo what they had done. But again, had I not answered the phone, never know what would have happened. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's one of those, man, glass half full, glass half empty.
From what I can tell, you soon joined the CBA's Fort Wayne Fury in late December of 92. How long were you playing in the CBA before an offer to head overseas to play appeared on your radar, Jeff?
I was just frustrated after the Atlanta thing, and I told my agent, just get me into a job overseas because I didn't want to spend no more time messing with the minor leagues because I figured it wasn't enough I could really accomplish there. They all knew what I could do. And, you know, sometimes I regret that because I figured if I had stayed and went back, maybe I would have got picked up by somebody else. And, you know, you don't know. But can't cry over spilled milk. You know, it is what it is.
How long were you playing for overseas then? And sort of what countries were you playing for? I know Turkey was one of them at one stage.
Yeah, my first country was Spain. I was in Spain for a couple of years. And then I went to Italy for a year. And then I came back to Spain for another year and a half. And I left Spain. Well, I was in Turkey for 2 years, then I came back to the Bulls, and after that, broke my foot, and I came back and played it. I left and went back to Turkey.
Just so many unfortunate moments of an injury at the worst possible time, and it certainly leads to a massive what-if, doesn't it?
Right.
All these years later.
It was interesting. I still felt good, still was blessed to be able to have the talent, to be able to get on the floor.
Oh, absolutely. Still achieved plenty in an injury-hampered career, for sure. Georgia Southern's media guide states that your jersey number 42 is one of only two in school history to have been retired. Do you remember what year that took place, and how does it feel to have your number up in the rafters?
It feels great. You know, it feels great because mine was the only one for a long time. And then actually, it was one before me some years ago. They just really hung it up there after, I guess, they come up with the idea or the plan to take a couple of guys that were retired to jersey and just put them in the rafter. But for a long time, mine was up there by itself. So this was in 89.
Okay.
When that happened, yeah, my senior season. I just went home a few weeks ago, went down there for the last home game, watched the team play, spoke to the guys. You know, I saw it still hanging in the rafter, and it's got, I think, two other guys' jerseys hanging up there now, too.
A great honour for sure. I read that you were inducted into the Georgia Southern Athletics Hall of Fame in 2004. How special was that ceremony for you, your family and friends?
Well, that was great as well. Personally, I was shocked that I really didn't even know they had a Hall of Fame, but they had had one for the longest, and I never got any notion that I was even nominated to be put in the Hall of Fame. Until my assistant coach back and said he had been fighting it for 15 years. I said, what? He said, yeah, I've been fighting to try to get you in the Hall of Fame for 15 years. He said we had either 10 people voted or 12 people voted, and two wouldn't. Two kept saying, no, not yet. And it was two little old ladies. I said, what? Two little old ladies that worked over in the administration. They felt that I didn't leave right for some reason. I said, what do you mean? That you, when you got drafted, you didn't come back and withdraw. And I said, so I don't remember that, you know, but does that constitute not being put in the Hall of Fame for 15 years? I'm like, wow. But anyway, that was the excuse that they gave me. And they're like, you're the greatest player in the school history, and it took them 15 years to put you in the Hall of Fame.
Two ladies with a grudge.
Yeah. Interesting, that's all.
Today in 2020, what involvement do you have with the game of basketball, Jeff?
Well, I coached for quite a few years. I took a break off this year, but I'll go back and coach next year. I love working with the youth and helping them develop. And, you know, a lot of the guys today think they're better than what they are. I'm still young enough to get out and take some shots with them and every now and then play with them. And so they get to see, you know, I say, you all think because I'm the coach that I can't play. I do play right now. That's one of my favorite pastimes. I still play in a few leagues here in Chicago during the winter and the summer years. Me and my former teammate in Charlotte, Kendall Gill, so we're best of buddies here, so we play together up here.
I see Kendall put some footage on from time to time of the league that he plays in, so you're actually on that team as well, are you?
Yeah, we're on the same team, yeah.
He's another former guest and friend of the show as well, Kendall. He's a great guy too, so I'll have to keep an eye out on some of the footage he uploads going forwards and try and spot you on the court as well.
Right, yeah.
Basketball Digest had a regular feature which was called The Game I'll Never Forget. Is there a particular game from your career that stands out more than any other?
I would say probably my first dunk in the NBA, which is against Philadelphia 76ers when Charles Barkley was there. And I did a pick and roll. Charles was guarding me, and BJ had the ball. I did a pick and roll with BJ. I rolled. He passed me the ball. I got my first dunk in the NBA. I would say that would be that particular game.
I love hearing that. I'm going to have to now go back through my collection, see what I can find from your era there and try and source that one out for you.
That was a regular season game. Then when I was with Atlanta, preseason game, but I got the dunk on Mutombo.
On Big Dikembe. You didn't give him the finger wave, though, did you, I hope?
No, I didn't give him the finger wave. No, I didn't give him the finger wave. We were playing up at Holy Cross, and we were scrimmaging, I think, Denver. We were going on the fast break. Stacey Ogman had the ball, and Mutombo was trying to catch him. And I was yelling, I'm trailing. He kept saying, I hear you. I said, okay. So he jumped, and Mutombo jumped, and he passed it back to me. So when Mutombo landed and tried to go back up, I was already over. And I got a dunk on. Now, I almost got Akeem Olajuwon.
Oh.
I almost got Akeem Olajuwon. That was regular season, but Robert Horry messed that up. He was a rookie that year. Akeem was guarding me, and Dominique drove baseline. So he left me at the top of the key and went to help. Neek jumped. I just came straight down the middle. He threw it to me, and I think I had the ball cocked back so far, Horry tipped it. But I still missed the dunk, but he tipped the ball.
Oh.
And I just feel you don't know how much that would have meant to me. Just good memories, man.
Thanks for sharing them over the last sort of hour or so. Just one last question. Did you have any particular significance to the jersey numbers that you wore during your career? I'm not sure what you wore in high school, but you had number 42 at Georgia Southern. And for the Bulls, you wore number 20, I believe, in Charlotte, and number 34, I think it was, in Atlanta. Any significance behind any of those numbers?
And also I had number 44 in it. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get 42 because Kevin had it.
Oh, yeah, Kevin Willis. Yeah, of course.
So I took 44 because I wore that on a practice jersey in college. In high school, I was number 20 one season, and that's why I chose the number 20 in Charlotte. 34, again, that was just a number given because I was coming in as a 10-day.
Right.
They asked me what number I wanted that next year. I said, well, you know, I can't have 42, so give me 44. So that's why I took 44. But that was pretty much it. But 42 was always my college number, so that's the number I still wanted in the NBA.
Well, Jeff, it's been a treat to have you on the show. It was a pleasure to have a chance to meet you in person. Thanks very much for taking time to chat, and I hope we can do it again sometime in the future.
Oh, not a problem at all. Thanks for being even interested. So, hey, it's a beautiful thing.
Just briefly for our listeners' context here, I saw you sort of near the front of the stage there at the Legends Brunch in Chicago towards the end of the event. From a distance, I thought, oh, I'm 95% sure that's Jeff Sanders. And I had my wife, Lisa, with me. I was trying to see if Lisa could subtly look at your name tag to see if it said Jeff. She couldn't tell. So I just said to her, I'll just go up to him and ask him. So I went up and asked, oh, sorry, are you Jeff Sanders? And sure enough, you were.
Right.
And that's thankfully how this chat came to be. So I'm glad I recognized you from a distance. I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me now. It's been a joy.
Not a problem. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Anytime.
Bye. Thanks for listening. I welcome your interaction with the show. You can suggest topics or guests you want to hear conversations with. A prime example follows in the podcast review I'm about to read. Send me an email, audioclipswelcome, inallairness@gmail.com. Time now to share another great review from a fan of the show. Thanks to Moon Patrol 33 via Apple Podcasts Australia. It's titled Thumbs Up, also a 5-star of rating. Thank you. And it reads, I'm pretty new to the whole podcast scene and discovered your show recently. I really enjoy your interviews and the in-depth knowledge and research you put in. Really look forward to new episodes in the future. Also, if you could get Tom Chambers as a future guest, I'd really like to hear that. Cheers, Jason. Well, thank you, Jason. That review is much appreciated, mate. Trust me, I'd love to get Tommy Chambers on the show as well. He is hoping that he might feature in an upcoming episode. Worldwide, the show has 163 ratings on Apple Podcasts with an average of 4.5 stars with 88 reviews across all providers. Thanks for your continued support.
If you add a review, I'd love to read it out on a future episode. Your ratings and reviews are one of the best ways to support the podcast. As I do love to say, if you enjoy the show, please tell your basketball-loving friends about it. Your word-of-mouth recommendations are worth their weight in gold. Stay up to date with my podcast and subscribe to my monthly email newsletter. You'll receive exclusive details on upcoming podcast episodes, future high-profile guests to appear on the show, and more. Simply email me inallairness@gmail.com. You can subscribe to my show in various ways. Search for In All Airness, three words, on your podcast app of choice. The show is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Android, and more. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show and share my web address with your friends and colleagues, inallairness.com. Check out the podcast archive for plenty more episodes with high-profile guests. Follow me on Twitter at InAllAirness. Please add your like to the show's social hub, facebook.com/InAllAirness. Join me next time for another edition of the show.